this week in the studio, Mick Jones and Lou Gramm for one of the most popular debut albums ever.
Originally, I'd come over to America because I felt in a funny way that somehow I was destined to be here. I was attracted, drawn towards America, drawn towards, you know, places, mythical places. It was like sort of Mecca. That is probably the greatest time when you first hear it on the radio. It's just, it's all from, and it's a funny point because then you know it's out of your hands. It's on its own. This is Mick Jones of Foreigner, and I'm in the studio.
It was a great beginning for chapter two of what Foreigner is and should be. Yeah, waiting for a girl like me
to come into my life. Hi, I'm Lou Gramm.
Hi, this is Mick Jones of Foreigner in the studio for Foreigner 4.
Foreigner's seemingly overnight success with that first 1977 album happened to a nucleus of British expatriate patchwork quilt musicians with a few unknown Americans, all at varying stages of their respective careers. While Foreigner founder Mick Jones of Spooky Tooth and Ian McDonald of King Crimson were veterans of the London music scene, neither had bankable reps for mainstream success prior to Foreigner. And singer Lou Gramm, at the time working construction as Louis Grammatico in Rochester, New York, after singing on Black Sheep's two obscure albums, Lou had seemingly had his brush with the big time turned out as merely a momentary blip on the radar. Foreigner's Mick Jones readily admits that he immigrated to the U.S. with little more than a dream.
Originally, I'd come over to America because I felt, in a funny way, that somehow I was destined to be here. I was attracted, drawn towards America, drawn towards, you know, places, mythical places. It was like sort of Mecca, you know, in certain ways. I had to come here. And I felt drawn towards this country, you know, and the musical heritage that had started me off, basically. And I felt somehow, I didn't know what it was, but I had to sort of, something inside me, I had to prove something here. It was sort of the ultimate test, in a way. I mean, I've always had a dream about things, you know. I mean, it's like, I am a romantic, I'm really not a realist at all. And the whole thing of this was sort of based on a dream. That's really the only way I can get through life, if we get sort of down to it. I mean, I have difficulty with just trying to take, you know, life as it is. I have to dream in life. I have to have things to dream about.
Feels like the very first time. It
memorable first times, then unknown singer Lou Gramm remembers the phone call from Mick Jones, inviting Lou to audition to what became Foreigner. And Lou admits that the first time, he turned it down.
Oh, I definitely remember the call. It was unbelievable that he and Ian McDonald were working together and what the goals of the band were, which was to make a timeless kind of lasting music, not a band of musical excesses. It would be a band to put together songs that would stand the test of time. In spite of that, I told him that I appreciate his call, but wasn't particularly interested because of my situation with Black Sheep and that I was determined to continue with my band and kind of see the band out and get my career going again. I don't know if he was taken back by it or not, but he suggested that I think about it and he would call me back in a few weeks' time. The rest of the guys in Black Sheep thought I was losing my mind. They felt that our chances of a new record deal and the success level was slim. It was a gamble as much as any up-and-coming band's chances are a gamble. But this, because of the potential and the lineup, it had a head start, to be sure, and that it would be a great way to at least further my career. And they said, you should get on a plane and give it your best shot. In a way, having the encouragement from the guys in my own band, at least I wouldn't have to carry guilt in my bag with me to New York. I wasn't betraying anybody. And I was really, really interested in what kind of songs and the whole perspective. I was interested in the big picture. It was a challenge. And how many opportunities does one get? I wasn't going to pass it up for stubborn motives or whatever. I wanted to go see if I was capable. I wanted to know what I had in me.
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our love. You never take advice. Someday. Fortunate.
Cold as Ice is another big reason why that debut Foreigner album had already sold a million copies by the end of summer 1977. So by June the following year, the big question in the music business became, can Foreigner beat the sophomore jinx? Here's Mick Jones.
The real pressure was an internal thing, I think, that we had a standard that we'd set ourselves to live up to, you know, and especially after the first album, it was, you know, obviously we knew people were looking at us. Can they sustain this? Can they do this? Or is this just like a freak album kind of thing, you know? So it's a combination of pride and pressure, I suppose. Well, the title speaks for itself, you know. What do you expect? Remember that? when I think back, I mean, the second album was quite different than the first album. We were starting to experiment a bit, you know. We were, whether it would appear that way to people, it strikes me that I can see a definite change there, you know. For a start, we didn't have that much time to think about it. We had to just go in and do it, you know. The first album was put together over a period of a year. And the formation of a band, you know, and the second album was, we got to do it quick, you know, because we were supposed to be in Japan in 4 weeks' time or something, you know.
You don't have to read my mind.
single from Foreigner's follow-up, Hot Blooded, was instantly on every radio the summer of 78. And when we return in a moment, Mick Jones and Lou Gramm tell of staggering success, High Times and Misdemeanors. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for Foreigner.
Hi, I'm Lou Gramm.
Hi, this is Mick Jones of Foreigner in the studio.
And I'm Redbeard. After passing on the opportunity the first time, Foreigner original singer Lou Gramm told me what finally convinced him.
I felt that there was an interesting chemistry. It looked like there was a great camaraderie, which I wanted to be part of. I was hoping that based on Mick's rock and roll experience and Ian's kind of eclectic left field background, that there would be some really, really interesting songs, rock-based, but set apart from everything else that was around. That was very appealing to me. We actually had a drummer named Stan first. He was a really good drummer. He was a black drummer, and he was a very soulful player. But after about a week or 10 days, he wanted to join the Coast Guard because he didn't feel the band was going to go anyplace. And Stan, if you're out there, we did okay.
Foreigner founder and songwriter Mick Jones with me in the studio.
Double Vision, I quite honestly didn't see as a single at that point. It was a surprise to me that it did become it was actually a gold single. you know, you always think you have sort of an idea of the potential of the songs, and that was a sort of a sleeper for me. I was quite surprised at the success of that song and what it actually represented as the title of the album too. The interesting thing at that point was that we were on the same label as the Rolling Stones, and the release of that album coincided with, I believe it was Some Girls. And, you know, I'd always imagined that the Rolling Stones and Zeppelin sold millions of albums, but I found out that up to that point they had never sold a million albums. And so we found ourselves in a funny position where after 3 or 4 million albums apiece, we were in, both of us were in new territory. And we were like neck and neck, you know, up until about 6 million. And I think, I mean, I don't know what's sold since, you know, catalog-wise, but at the time, I think we pipped them at around six and a half million. And I was quite proud of that little moment, I can tell you.
At last check, Foreigner's Double Vision was around 8 million in sales, which, coupled with almost that many sold of the debut, put Mick Jones unofficially as the CEO of a very valuable franchise.
It was always very difficult for me to live with, in a way, the fact that I was, you know, in quotes, the leader of the band, etc. I was just the guiding part of the band, I think. I was, you know, it was my initial idea. It stemmed from a certain point in my life when I felt that this was something I wanted to do. And it was extremely tough because I felt sensitive to them. But at the same time, I knew that, you know, this is something really serious is happening to us here. And we have a tremendous amount to live up to and to strive for here, you know. And I was, you know, I was pretty manic about it, to the point where, you know, I know I upset a lot of people's feelings at some points, because I was driving it feeling this is everything that anybody has ever strived for. This kind of a break, it just doesn't happen every day. This is the time, this is the big test. Can we, you know, we have to survive this and sustain this. It's very hard when you're with five people to have them understand that at the same time, you know, so everybody's going through their particular personal trauma and fear of what it was. You know, it was an awesome kind of a thing at the time. It was just frightening. I appeared to be handling it better than anybody else. That's all. I was freaking out myself. Daylight.
The title song to Foreigner's third album, Head Games, is certainly included in the new double disc Foreigner 40 Hits, available now on CD, vinyl, and digitally. But it was about that time when the Foreigner fairy tale would come to a chapter where not everybody could live happily ever after. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Foreigner's Mick Jones and original singer Lou Graham.
Hi, I'm Lou Graham.
Hi, this is Mick Jones of Foreigner in the studio for Foreigner 4.
Thanks, guys. I'm Redbeard. Even though he had founded the group, and in spite of the fact that Foreigner's third album, Head Games, did sell more than a million copies, veteran Mick Jones knew the warning signs of a band at odds with itself.
Well, I saw the band disintegrating, you know, as a band, and I thought, and I had to sort of take stock of things, and I was the one to sort of bring it to a point, you know, to bring it out. But I sat with Lou one night, I think we were in Japan at the end of a tour around the Head Games time, and I said, look, this is just falling apart, you know, this, you know, I mean, I was almost ready to leave at that point. I was getting a bit, disillusion was rearing its head at that point with me.
Ex-Foreigner lead singer Lou Graham remembers how it went.
After we toured Japan as the last leg of the Head Games tour, the whole touring of that album was an uphill struggle, I think, and we just had to kind of reflect on what we wanted to do with our careers following this. And I secretly was of the mind that if it couldn't be a little more fulfilling for me, that I would rather move on. And Mick, as I learned later, had similar feelings. And at that point, we weren't tossing around personnel changes. We actually began to write and rehearse for Foreigner 4 with the six-piece band intact. And it was only after a week in the studio that the kind of undercurrent and dissatisfaction came to a head. And I think the changes were made, or I think the band would have fallen apart right in the studio.
So band leader Mick Jones took the drastic action of firing original Foreigner members Ian McDonald and Al Greenwood while in the studio, paring the group back to just four. The revised Foreigner lineup left Mick Jones with mixed feelings.
I kind of sort of looked at it coldly, and I realized that there was a core of the band, as far as I could feel, and it was between myself and Lou and Dennis. You know, that was the core that had survived from the beginning. And Rick came along with that at that point too. And that's how we, through many deliberations and painful times, we decided to take the band down to four people. That was probably the toughest part of the whole thing.
It felt more like a group as a four-piece band than it ever did as a six. And I don't mean it to be cold, because there was camaraderie. We had been through a lot as a six-piece band, and it was, on one hand, it hurt because it was tearing a piece of the band away. On the other hand, it was so much more fulfilling, and as a career move, it was the right thing to do.
You can't.
first single from Foreigner 4, a title simple but significant, was an immediate hit throughout the summer of 1981, the first of four big hits from the revamped Foreigner lineup. Original singer Lou Gramm compares notes with Mick Jones in the studio.
Some of them are pretty natural. I mean, you almost know right away. Some things you got to turn them inside out. I mean, I know a lot of these things. I still have cassettes of the early demos laying around on some of the really big ones, and they don't sound anything like. You wouldn't even recognize them. I'm telling you.
I mean, the song develops from the initial idea, then you start throwing it around with everybody, and it's everybody else's input as well that comes in, and some songs really are, immediate, and you don't really have to mess with them.
You don't want to mess with them.
No. But, for the most part, I think you have to put a bit of work into them and see how they fly.
You just have to be ready to catch those when they're flying through the air, To me, that's the essence of real songwriting, It's not sitting down, poring over reams of paper and this. I mean, that's a part of it, but the real essence of songwriting is the ability to just have your eyes open when it's going past you, so you can pick it out.
So long, I've been looking too hard, I've been waiting too long. Sometimes I don't know what I will find. I only know it's a matter of time. When you love someone, when you love someone, it feels so right, so warm and true. I need to know
quite a stunning young lady walked into the room just before we did it. I've never heard him sing like that before. We had been singing it, and you know, Lou very often would, you know, when we'd be writing, you know, I'd express certain things the way I would sing the thing, and he would sing it and take my emotion, and somehow that was the first time that I really felt that he got in, he was inside, you know, we were one person almost. You know, it was like, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. It was like, whether the girl in question, or, you know, the fact that there was somebody in there he was singing to, or whether, however it was just another part of that very unexplainable song, you know. To me, it's still a mystery to me, that song.
Waiting for a Girl Like You from Foreigner 4, that song locked into the number two position on the hit charts for 10 consecutive weeks in 1981. A timeless song on Foreigner 4 is a classic rock and roll fable, the story of every kid who has ever had a guitar and a dream. Here's Mick Jones.
Well, it was a song that started out initially that Lou had written a sort of a beginning to, and I think it was called Take One Guitar at the time. It went through a tremendous amount of changes, and gradually through, I think one day Lou and Matt and I just jammed in the studio, and we came up with a sort of a complete song. That's when it became Jukebox Hero, which was a title that I'd had in stashed away for a while. From that, the story sort of evolved. Something that hit me one night, we were playing... I think it was Cincinnati we were playing, and it was where they'd had some crowd trouble, and people had been, a couple of people had been killed or injured at that Who concert there. I think we played there sort of a couple of months after the event, and I saw a kid backstage, you know, and I was feeling a bit strange about the fact that, you know, people had been killed, and you know, all the things that had gone on in this particular Coliseum that we were playing, and I saw this kid backstage, and it was raining, and somehow that's the image I took and sort of pursued that as sort of from that point of that backstage door and a fan that was back there, you know, it was sort of a parody about what we go through and what, you know, is a deep-lying, underlying thing and attracts us to want to do what we do.
Standing in the rain with his head hung low.
Stop!
co-writer and singer Lou Gramm talks about Foreigner's Jukebox Hero.
The lyrical thread of that song is based around the groups that I almost saw when I was growing up, the tickets I couldn't get a hold of to see Zeppelin and Hendrix and The Who. Myself and a crowd of other kids, strangers, who had one thing in common, that they wanted to be there, whether they were inside the building or out. And we used to have our heads pressed against the backstage door, just waiting to get a glimpse and just trying to get as much of that sound and the feeling of what was going on inside that auditorium. It's an intense experience, and I wouldn't have traded it for anything. And to put it into words, to put the theme down, I think it's one that many, many kids identify with and the dream to be up there themselves.
I've got to take a little time, a little time to think things over. I better read between the lines in case I need it when I'm older. Mountain I must climb feels like the world upon my shoulder. Through the clouds I see love shine. It keeps me warm as life grows colder. In my life there's been heartache and pain. I wanna know what love is.
Want to Know What Love Is from Foreigner's excellent but underrated Agent Provocateur album was a bona fide, can't-be-denied number one hit in 1985. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests Mick Jones and Lou Graham. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2017, all rights reserved. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.
Thinking about the times I was growing up and the road that brought me here. All the little things that change, the shape of things that come, the laughter and the tears. I remember when the world was at my feet and I could do no wrong. My heart so young and free, living out this fantasy, moving right along. I saw the Beatles on my black and white TV. It changed everything deep down inside of me. And when I think about the way I felt that day, I'm turning back to time, flying through my fears. There's something missing in my life, so I'm turning back, turning back the time. I wonder if I'll ever feel the way I did, 'cause it's been a long, long time. Those double vision days, the autobahns and the motorways, opened up my mind. I saw the Beatles on my black and white TV. It started something new.